but I'm in trouble at all just to remind me like that. I give up right on the spot.
When he was going to
so many times.
Join them. Join. Follow us.
Stephanie's crying.
I remember what the program was asking me about. One day over at that tumor.
Oh, what were they asking me?
Might come up with this. The truck and the
phone. Yeah, it was the question.
For example,
but it was serious.
He was mad for somebody else over there. The other one went on back behind George. Got a rock, put it on his own, and come back up there. Recording Mike looking old, grabbed that rock, throw it back, chuck it, coat it in. You did not do this.
When I was shaving the paddle, I turned that way and I wasn't looking at what I was doing. And I cut my knuckle, but I ran into the bathroom and I was holding it behind my shirt. I ran into the bathroom, I put it under the faucet and get it washed off. And Kevin came in, he was wondering what's happening, and he saw my thing and he said, hold it under the water, Tommy. And just was saying it, you know, real silent to my ear. And then he took it and he held it to that human kidney and he took me home and blood was just running all down my arm and everything. It was a big cut. And Kevin took me home and danced. To you, I didn't lose my fingers.
Amazing. That's beautiful. You look like such a healthy youngster.
She's gotten taller. She's gotten taller.
Mm-hmm. Growing up.
For your love is concerned, I would have lost my hand. But when Mark had it bitten, because it was on the day that you guys were supposed to come. And me and Saudi was due to go in. But Joyce looked at it, and it was 50 cents better than it was the day that all these guys were seeing us. That was the day I was on the boat. And she wrapped it up the next day. So I had to go get his thing. We looked at it. And we took the bandage off, the skin was drying up, which, you know, skin don't dry up that easy. With medication, no way it was you. I know it has to be you. So we was on wait, but I was still due to go to the hospital. So we waited for one more day. Then the next day came, we unwrapped it again, and the whole skin, the skin that is now, it is back to normal. And we started to plug it up as well. Like somebody sewed it back together.
It was turning into gangrene, really.
It was rotted.
It was rotted and you could smell it. But the part was, I put a picture on it the day before, walking down the port, I had a picture in my hand, I laid it on his hand, I said, do something really nice in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And, it was that picture that did it, because it was right after that they opened it up and saw that it was real.
But it was so bad that he was in a group of us, just sitting and talking like this, and we were wondering where the odor was. Mm-hmm. And Joyce said, it's in his hands. Mm-hmm. There was just rotten flesh on his hands. It was a hideous looking mess, horrible lungs. In 24 hours' time, I think he said, it got so much better that we thought it would be all right not to go to Georgetown. It looked so much better.
Amazing. Gangrene doesn't get better.
No.
That's
it.
No way.
I want to ask you a question. This, remember the biggest capitalist dog, America, when it goes down, who's ever in command of America at the time, which I hope and assume it'll be you, will you try to unite like the other communist countries such as Russia and China and Cuba or whoever else and help undo the rest of the capitalist dogs in the world, or do they have to come on their own?
Well, you,
when you're not existing, you are thinking. That degree. You never took that degree before. But you might play the last stage with all the knowledge acting. You are first to lead the movement. Has to be somebody to die in order to make it possible for something to be free. So I've always counted myself as a part of the avant-garde rather than the one that would perpetuate the thing. I would more be inclined to think that we won amongst our rank that have been taught well, trained well. Certainly the proper thing to do would be to unite all fraternal nations, unite them by conciliation and compromise. I mean, you'd have to compromise national interests and prove it. This paranoia strikes deep, as the song says. As the song says. If I were to be that leader, I would unite the world. Be necessary. The world couldn't survive without being united. I never project myself in that role. It's such a deathly revolutionary ending. Too long range for me to anticipate being able to fulfill the desires of the people as I could in that position. I have no ambition. I would like to be in a position to make a better place for those of you that I love. And I can love endlessly. It's good to still got a vision way down the end of the road. My vision lasts from morning to night. It goes to my present. Not by a day at a time. I have strategies that are there in the back of my mind, but I'm so busy fighting the present more that I have very little time to implement any grandiose schemes, even with a super ego refinement that I have now. It's just the revolution is too involved, and we're not far along. You think much about all that. A long time before we see all the world living under communism. Practically speaking, fates accomplished of history of certain bizarre things can take place and do strange things. And always make it come about quicker than one anticipates. But if a socialist must be one thing, I'm not certain. You must be a realist. She must be a realist. Because when people dream, impossible dreams, and those dreams don't come true, they're like Christians who have delusional systems. They lose their faith. A socialist that can be depended on is one who has no faith in the future, only in the present. I don't mean all sources will betray you have a future vision. safe bet is dependent on socialism is right for this moment.
I was just thinking what you said last night about the Lenin concept. About how you said that Lenin, I think I'm sure you said Lenin, that Lenin thought that you'd have to have a world revolution throughout the world. And I was thinking that if it wouldn't happen like that, and like America was capitalist was brought down, and it was in a stage where that someone could go out and you know start uniting like the Soviet Union and China.
There would be world revolution in a matter of a few short years if it were not for one fact: the advancement of the warfare state. The technology of the nuclear age. It always makes
socialist to be more careful out of respect and regard for human life. You could even make socialist compromise if they're not careful. So one has to be a tightrope walker. You know, how much you compromise with them. If you negotiate without compromising your principles, yet how much you must compromise in order to save putting the world from dying. It's a lot of lies. You don't want to come up with any quick conclusions. And then inevitable, even though I rather think it is inevitable. Chinese are more realistic by building underground shelters. I think that you cannot negotiate socialism with capitalists. And I do not believe that socialists and capitalists can survive in the same world. No more than I could imagine seeing cobra.
Mongoose.
I don't believe they're compatible. They're basically contradictory. They can negotiate out of self-interest for a long while, but just to stand to maintain their lives. Finally, the very ugly nature of capitalism, its parasitical nature of wanting to devour, to use and abuse and exploit, to bring it into confrontation with the socialists. And the capitalists will begin brinkmanship, as we have seen too many instances in history. Even Kennedy, who was more moderate, used brinkmanship over the Bay of Plenty of Cuba over the missile crisis. Recently, not more than a couple weeks ago, maybe longer, six. Ford said that we would be the first, we could easily be the first to use nuclear weapons. That is a change of overt policy. It's always been there. America would naturally be the only one who would use bombs, because only capitalists have to defend themselves with such horrible weapons. Socialists need no defense like that. So, Ford said, if you probably read it in the news, he said, we will, if necessary, be the first to use the bomb. In other words, he means it's admitting publicly, which America has always tried to keep a dark, hidden secret, has always denied. I said, we will never be the first, under any instance, to use a nuclear first strike. Now he's saying, we will use first strike. That means capitalism is running out of means of defending itself. Its concept is defunct. Its economics is ruined. And so they're on their last, they're like a jilted lover. He sees his companion lost and he's got nothing left to fight with. Some weapon. Can't talk anymore. He's lost his love. He's lost everything. He has nothing to live on. He has nothing to build on. He has no character. So he'll even risk using nitroglycerin unnecessary and blow them all up. Many a jilted lover kills both his former wife and the lover. And himself. And that's what capitalism will do when he like this. It's ready to die. I believe they'll do it because they know that they'll be charged for high crimes against people. War crimes. Rockefeller, DuPont, all the other renegades, the running dogs of imperialism, full well know history. And Hitler's Germany, people were held responsible for war crimes even down to the level of the corporal. And all the major cabinet of Germany were held. Ostensibly were to be found guilty and charged with murder and executed. However, at the Nuremberg trial, 99 that were convicted there of high crimes against the people, all of them were out of jail within 5 years' time. But even that took capitalists to be too long. Many of them. Some mad general would think 5 years is too long. And then some mad general with a holy, unholy passion against truth, brainwashed by religion, that communism is the Antichrist or something. He's very dangerous. We saw, there's a movie once, I've forgotten what the name of it was. Just that was a part of Dr. Strange, where the man cut off the, was it? The general went haywire and cut off his whole base.
Failsafe.
That failsafe?
Yeah, he had the, well, Dr. Strange was there.
The lunatic general, it's sort of a comedy. I think it was a general, wasn't it? Was that failsafe that the general took over his whole squadron base?
He went nuts. He went cracked up. He was failsafe. He was in the... He had locked himself in the room that held the switchboard that he controlled the destiny of the world with the nuclear bombs.
And there were three letters that had to be put out to stop the bombs from being dropped.
Yeah.
And it was P-O-E, and he kept writing, preserve our natural essence, our body essence, and we preserve our essence. And that's how they figured out what three letters it was.
I don't know, in the next same movie that then the dummies bombed in Moscow, and then we had, the president had to fly a plane over New York and blew up New York.
That was fail-safe, I think.
Yeah. Because they couldn't stop the
plane. They had a compromised city for a city.
One day that would have been realistic. The age of satellite warfare is not realistic. Most thinkers believe America has orbiting very high megaton, hydrogen bombs, thus forcing the Soviets to do the same. And the Soviets, the only hope for the world is that the Soviets have a sophisticated anti-ballistic missile system. The odds they don't have too much of one, or they would not be as careful as they are to avoid nuclear confrontation.
Yeah, they're worried about the Polaris, aren't they? The Polaris submarines. Is that they can stop the ones that are land-based, but they can't stop the ones that come from God knows where. Nobody knows where any Polaris submarines are at any one time, so they can't track the missiles.
Particularly, you're right, because particularly they would have trouble with one just off the coast. And they easily expand the life. America extends the life. Any capitalist structure do that. Even though the Polaris submarine might be inundated itself, destroyed in the thrust. Polaris is a submarine off the coast of Russia, Black Sea, Baltic Sea. Pacific, like a battle of this time. No way you can stop 16 missiles. They could bring 16 missiles and by being just a safe distance out of their territorial waters, they could fire missiles and hit targets within 50 seconds. An anti-ballistic missile system wouldn't know where in the hell would you say to program itself unless you had it pinpointed in every square mile of land surface. It's a complicated business, nuclear age. So Lenin didn't have a problem to face. He could talk about world revolution very easily because he could start a world revolution without all those major consequences. Now to start a world revolution, you may be some crazy Christian mad general.
Yeah.
We've got problems.
How can Ford make a statement of we won't be the first, the United States will not be the first to use nuclear weapons? Well, no, we introduced them in 1945. We used them then.
He said it may be that. He said it was, he's changed his version. Last 6 weeks he said may be the first. Which is a frightening admission for capitalists to make.
there is. They always want to look like the good guys. They always talk about our defense system.
What do they mean when they talk about their first strike capability? What's in their mind when they're saying?
Well, first strike capability. Can we knock them out before they get a chance to retaliate?
Mm-hmm.
To get our missiles in there and do the most damage. But I think most sophisticated military opinion is that nobody's going to get out of the nuclear war without a lot of damage. The first strike capability would give you considerable advantage. Counterforce strategy was attempted to be adapted by Secretary McNamara, who's now president of the World Bank. And technically, theoretically, he said it's still involved. Counterforce strategy would be city for city. There'd be no cities. Russia would strike no cities, we'd strike no cities. But it's very difficult to control something like that. That's counting on absolute precision and no miscalculation and no human error, and certainly no electronic failure. I think it'd be very difficult to carry out even as a strategy.
What's this thing they're talking about, flexible response or something? They say that they had a negotiation night where they were talking about, from what I understood, the United States and the Soviet Union said, well, maybe we could make a limited nuclear war, call a flexible response, like in Turkey or Cyprus, and stop it at so many missiles. To make it sound like the Soviet Union sound kind of imperialistic.
Discuss that kind of thing. The SALT talks, they discussed that. Yes. That was one of Schlesinger's ideas. Schlesinger's a war hawk. There's no way you're going to limit a nuclear war, for sure, because of the radiation factor. You may say, well, we're not going to have anything. We don't have a limited war in the Cyprus. The damn trade winds are wrong that day, or the sea winds are wrong that day, and they blow it back on Russia, and a whole city such as Stalingrad is wiped out by the residue. Then are they going to be content to limit the Cyprus? They're going to want a city, just like they'll say, they're going to want us, it becomes endless.
The other thing too, out there, where a lot of stuff goes off automatically if the radioactivity level reaches a certain point in an area, or there's a certain seismic disturbance, and then they all just go. Nobody has to put.
Well, I don't know that they ever adopted the least to surprise. Dr. Teller had the doomsday weapon, the ultimate weapon. Dumb fucker, I wouldn't be surprised if they do have such devices. What he wanted to do was to put a bomb deep within the natural crater of the Earth's surface, put a large amount of the megatonnage, I've forgotten what it was, 1,000 megatons, put it in a line across the continental divide or something of that sort, and then when anybody was hit, some bitch goes off, splits the planet. And he thought that would be a deterrent. But it's madness because somebody can make a mistake. And someone made a man, well, man makes a mistake, one bomb hits. But nobody's ever said whether it was adopted or not. We don't know. You see, you have no control. People have no control with the Defense Department, the CIA, and they're intrigued. You have no control. You do not know a thing about what the Defense Department is doing. And Teller was doing a lot of talk about it. One thing he talked did get done was he put nuclear missiles rotating on flat cars. I don't know what is still going on, but I know from one of our sources that flat cars were being manned in the country with something with no higher officer in charge than a lieutenant and a sergeant. And they were going on trains and just trains and such, ordinary freight train. And this is on flat cars. So sergeant and lieutenant gets drunk,
men decide to play games, like some of the people were telling me here, the games have been played just for fun. And I decided, well, drunk, you don't have to help people undo it, no. And these flag cards were absolutely independent, not triggered into some code device as complicated as fail-safe, where a coordinate command had to be synchronized. These flag cards could initiate the attack itself, because that was Dr. Keller's idea, that the only safety would be that they would have independent resourcefulness. It couldn't be, well, the coordinate could be wiped out, thus the missiles could, there'd be no flexible response if you wiped out the coordinate command. That kind of insanity doesn't take in the human air, take the human quality. We live in a hell of an age, nuclear age is a hell of an age.
Well, the, I think it was one of the silo missiles that they had where he had the two men that were down there together, and one had a gun, both of them had guns pointing at one another. Or, if you push the button, I'll kill you, or, is this weapon obsolete now, or they still have?
They still got that. That's standard. Right. The men in the silos all have just two men. With two keys. No one can keep them, we turn on two keys simultaneously. They both got guns. So, Newsweek brought that up very clearly, that the first sucker to pull the gun can make the other guy turn his key. What you gonna do, you see? That's fact. And they've never done a thing about that. So you're just waiting for some suicidal soul.
Mm-hmm.
The guy got jilted in love, and things went wrong, people would commit suicide over the stupidest thing, so he wants to go out. He wants to take his wife, he thinks he's making love, some man up on terra firma. He wants to take her out too and get vengeance. And call up on the goddamn phone, so I got, I'm getting ready to blow a missile, your ass is going to grass. I mean, it's some bizarre sort of thing, but it's certainly possible that people commit suicide all the time, so why in hell is somebody going to go nuts someplace down in a silo, particularly dangerous factors they have about this, which they talked about resolving but never did, was that these people are down in those silos for weeks at a time, alone, looking at each other. That in itself is not healthy. Two men strapped at a seat with a goddamn gun and a key and looking at each other, looking at a panel. People get creepy just from being around a person in close quarters, even when they're friends. In no way the human society is going to master the nuclear age unless socialism sneaks up on them and gets these nuclear weapons in control. There's no disarmament, you know. There's not been an effective even arms control. There's not a slight talk of disarmament. No arms control. The last week, China had an underground test, America had an underground test, Russia had an underground test.
Brazil just got stuff to make bombs with, didn't they?
Unfortunately, too long ago. I'm in a position to know about that. Brazil has had this stuff about 9 months. India blew up the bomb. Now, India, the subcontinent of India, 700-some million people. Most ecologists say a third of them doomed to starve to death, unless there's some form of communism, which doesn't seem to be taking place. Now, India will probably commit blackmail against the more advanced country sometime. When their hordes and masses are starving to death on TV cameras, they'll say, we're going to set off our bombs if you do not give us food. Nuclear blackmail. It was a bad omen when India got the bomb, because India is a backward nation. Quasi-socialist leader, but no way does she have the kind of control that she needs over the Indian House of Delegates. Too many. She's taken martial law steps, but she still doesn't have control of the opposition. The cat was very thick as they can be, thick as lice in the Indian subcontinent. So she can't control all that mess. She can't colonize the country. There's all sorts of feudal, what do they call these Indian sheiks?
Catholic?
Brahmin? Well, they were Indians. They have their own territories. They were puppet kings. Kind of like the China warlord, but they don't call them that.
Rajas.
Sure, there's a word like that.
The
Sikhs? They're suitable kings.
Mm-hmm.
They have land been given to them for centuries. And people in virtual slavery. Then there's unstable government that doesn't represent the 700 million people with atomic bombs. When did India set off a bomb? It was what?
Not long ago.
Better than a year ago, I'm sure. Two. How many more does she have? And diplomatic immunity represents a terrible problem with the atomic bomb, because the stupid-ass Indian diplomat can bring the son of a bitch in